Big time count. What B movie will be the ultimate champion? You might think they're crazy, might think they're diseases. But they watch all the shot to find the best of the beast. It's Stan, Jim, Jack, and Nick who watch till it's finished. But their love for these movies can be diminished. And maybe the film's plot has no rhyme or reason. But that's part of the charm, Owen Brad's of the season. The low budget film that it is most true. They find in the flick that's most boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boom, boom, Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boom, boom, Electric Boogaloo.
They were born under a bad sign. They are Son of Boogaloo. Welcome back, my friends, to Season 6. This is Son of Boogaloo. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am so happy to be with you today to talk about Halloween 6, The Producer's Cut. And so to talk about this movie, I am joined by my good friends, and I am joined by James Cotta.
I'm happy to be here. I am the Producer's Cut of James Cotta this episode.
So you're a little more filled out.
That's right. Less violence and more character development.
Excellent. Still makes no sense. But speaking of no sense, we have Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. Yeah, there's some no sense going on here.
Yeah, I mean, in a latter Halloween movie. Wow, that's amazing. And then the man who brought us Halloween 6, Jack Hall.
What's up, Grumpies? And yes, there's some nonsense also going on here.
I mean, we kind of make our living, make hay with nonsense on this show. So
yeah, that's our zone.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. This introduction is equally as awkward and nonsensical as the introduction of the movie.
Don't worry, it'll be fixed in the producer's cut.
Yeah. So Nick, tell us all about the movie, why don't you?
Oh, I would love to. In fact, I spent the first half of this movie trying to figure out how I was going to explain this movie to you guys, because I had no idea what was going on. I was trying to remember who was in another film, who's been recast, what the hell was going on, because it is not a simple movie to explain. And I was excited for this movie because I always thought when I saw Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, that, you know, something was missing. And, you know, if I could see the producer's cut, it would all make sense. I was freaking wrong. Nothing in this movie makes sense. So to summarize it for you guys, I am taking the one sentence IMDb uses to describe this movie. 6 years after Michael Myers last terrorized Haddonfield, he returns in pursuit of his niece, Jamie Lloyd, who has escaped with her newborn child, for which Michael and a mysterious cult have sinister plans.
Dum, dum, dum.
Well,
that doesn't do it justice.
That doesn't do it justice, but what the hell? I mean, I had no idea. No idea. I mean, I was pretty sure the guy with the spurs on his boots was attached to a cult of druids, maybe. You have Paul Rudd doing his best job. Actually, he's the best thing in this movie. But wow, I mean, they never explain how he figures out druids may be contained here.
There's, yeah, they do. They're just not well.
And then there's this thing with an arm mark, a rune, a little tattoo scar thing on that's being transferred from wrist to wrist at some points in this movie. No idea who And it's edited in such a way, I had no idea who was even had it at most of the time. This is the most incomplete movie I've ever seen. And this cut, I believe, is longer than the theatrical version.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah. Oh,
it's good additions, obviously. they're really helped out.
Did anyone else find this movie was edited in a fashion that is opposite of a horror movie? That they'd actually have like the music building to like what you know is a jump scare, and you start to get ready, and then nothing happens. And when they have something that happens that's supposed to be a jump scare, they've got nothing and it's completely ineffective.
Well, I mean, the big challenge you have, I mean, this movie would be a good academic study in
what in the not way to you, do.
Well, no, in the way that a movie gets edited, because this movie didn't get finished in this form. It got as far as like a work print in this form and then massively re-edited by the Weinsteins and the director into the thing that actually got released in the theater. But that means this version never got its sound completed. It never got pickup shots. Like there was a bunch of the things you do to polish a movie didn't get done for this version. That's why there's some choppiness to it.
Yeah. I mean, you still have like 50, like a lot of shots of like hands reaching for doorknobs and stuff like that, which would typically be like pickup shots.
Yeah. This reminds me, I watched the director's cut of 54 recently, and it has the same challenge where the movie wasn't finished before it started getting messed with, also by the Weinsteins, coincidentally. But yeah, like you end up with, I mean, much like the Donner cut is the exact same thing, the Donner cut of Superman 2, where you have what they shot and what you shot and no money to do anything extra, and your soundtrack isn't finished. So you end up with this kind of cobbled together thing that isn't quite a cohesive like piece of work, because it's not like it was 100% done and then you did the other version.
No, exactly. This is as close to what the producers could get us with what they had available. But this is not still the actual vision that the producer and the original screenwriters wanted for the film. It's just as close as we're ever going to get.
Now, I thought this was done before, and then it just did so bad in test screenings that Weinstein stepped in and
the Weinsteins would have tested. They tested stuff in work print phase, like they were heavy duty testers for films. Like they do a lot of audience testing before they released a film. So yeah, it didn't get to 100% polished.
No, and that's the thing is that yes,
as polished as Halloween 6 was ever going to get. Like that can't be an always on this.
Yeah, but I mean that's the thing is it's even during the film. You know, I mean they're sitting there, they're cutting scenes constantly on the day of the film that they were going to film and that type of thing. So no matter what, it's just like they ran out of, I mean, it's done for $5 million and it was supposed to be $6 million. They had $1 million pulled during production because Hellraiser Bloodlines went over the project or budget.
And there's another winner.
Oh, money well spent there.
They had to pull it from somewhere. So, I mean, then you had the director caught in the middle between the producers and the writer and Miramax, and then him wanting to do his own thing, but feeling he had to side with Miramax because, and Dimension Films, because he, I mean, he wasn't a fan of Halloween, as he admitted. He had a 3-picture deal with them, you know? So luckily he would go on to his next film, to
Phantoms. Ben Affleck,
to Phantoms. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody.
Yeah.
So happy.
And that just proves he had so much talent.
Well, but you know what? He went on to we wouldn't have The Wire without him. So it's not like he didn't. He went on to have a fine career. Like you know, The Wire is one of the best series ever, you know, on television, right?
That's right. He should stick to television for sure then, yes.
Which is pretty much what he does now. Yeah. But it's this is like the behind-the-scenes stuff about this film, so much more interesting than the film. But
well, it's so weird because as I was watching it, I really felt like, you know, in the commercials world, there you can have a donut where it's like you've got the you got your front tag and you got your end tag and then you put shit in the middle. And that's actually what this movie felt like. You had your front story, you had your back story, and then the shit in the middle was an actual Halloween movie. The rest of the donut was totally not a Halloween movie.
Good way to put it.
I want to clarify something. What you've described is a Danish.
Oh, no. That's true. A donut technically has nothing in the middle if you're going by the baked goods.
wait, what are those? All those donut holes I'm eating then?
According to Stan, just the shit in the middle. That's for sure. Just the shit. Can you give me a box of that shit in the middle?
I want to order that.
From a donut shop, I'm going to go ask that right as soon as
and if you go into Dunkin' Donuts, they'd be like, that's all we have, sir.
Officially funnier than Halloween 6. Yeah, this is one of those movies, though, where as you always go along in the slasher movie genre, you always have, they always feel like they have to try to bring into the mythology and try to really fill it out with wacky shit that tries to explain why the killer is the killer and stuff like that. And I feel like they started that in 5. And then this is one of those cases where it's just like, oh yeah, it's the killer and it's druids and it's runes and tattoos
but normally I like it.
When the new Halloween came out a couple months, go ahead. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Nick.
But I none of it, like Michael doesn't actually, is not attached. He seems to be just a guy standing there.
Yeah, he's like the goon.
With only like 4 kills in this movie. Maybe 5.
Yeah, this kill count's way lower than the theatrical, isn't it? Like, they added characters just to kill them for the theatrical, I think.
The theatrical is far more gory, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's not. That wasn't a humorous joke. I think they added, like, 6 more characters just to kill them.
I think so. Yeah, like, it literally, one of the reasons they thought that it wasn't testing well enough was the lack of gore, so they were doing that, yeah.
Yeah, well, they added some creativity for the kills, too, because the kills we have in this one, especially off the top, the 2 kills off the top, are very boring.
Oh yeah, it's not about the kills in this one at all. And the theatrical, there's actually a director's cut as well that is out there, and that one has never been released on Blu-ray still. But that's the one that was NC-17. That's even gorier than what the actual theatrical cut is.
Well, give me that one then. I mean, when I come, here's the thing, right?
Honestly, Stan, this is the superior cut. This is superior to the theatrical cut. Well, no question about it. Like, as much as it's probably got more Boogaloo elements, but it's also more entertaining and might still make a little more sense.
I did find a count, by the way, 17 kills in the theatrical and 8 in the producer's cut.
Wow.
Really significant difference.
Yeah, because when I go to a slasher movie, you know what? I'm really not there for you to fill out the world and to give me a lot of story. I'm there for the kills. So to me, you know, that's weakening a slasher movie if you're dropping the body count by half.
Yeah, and I lean so far towards the latter. Like I'm not a fan of the zombie Halloween movies because it's only about creating a backstory for Michael Myers, and I honestly couldn't give a crap.
And that was the point, was that nobody gave a crap. And that's the problem with this one too, right? Nobody, you're not supposed to care. Like, that was the vision, was this is the boogeyman. This is the shape. You don't know why he is, that he's evil. Yeah. That's what's scary.
Halloween is by far the most complicated timeline of any movie series. Like, you think Star Wars is difficult with like the prequels and the midquels and everything. They've restarted this story 3 times. They've restarted it 3 times, and there's like 4 different timelines of this series, and the new one ignores everything except for the very original film.
Oh yeah, I tried to go on to see which movies I should watch to watch the new one. And I actually found a website that listed four different ways that you could watch the movies to actually get to the new one. And it's like, oh my.
The brand new one in 2018 ignores everything except the original film.
Which is also what Halloween H2O did.
No, it ignored everything except for the first two films.
That's true.
Good which point. It was just even more of a headache. Yeah. They've rebooted this twice with starting from two different points. Yeah. Which is just awesome.
Yeah, because
it is. It's Boogaloo right there.
Oh yeah.
When the Boogaloo bonus came out in 2018, someone asked me, "What is this, like the fourth or fifth Halloween movie?" I'm like, "This is the 11th." And the
now,
fourth
though, one to be called now you're making me want to watch Halloween Resurrection because it's the only one I haven't seen, and it just according to your little timelines there, it's the one that's left out of everything.
Well, it follows Halloween H2O.
It
follows it correctly.
But so there's a 6-film set, a 4-film set, and then the 2 zombie films, and then a 2-film set. So make room on your shelf for all those box sets.
I'm the one with them all because I'm a fan of the series, and I'm a fan of Michael Myers. But I also accept this stuff for what it is. But I got the 15 set. I mean, it's a gorgeous box set that Shout Factory put together, and you know, and then the new one. So like, that's why I was able to get you guys this.
Yeah, I love Michael Myers. Like I as a general rule, I don't care what they do with them. Unless it involves Rob Zombie, and then I absolutely care that what they do with him, and wish that that Rob Zombie had never actually existed as a whole, because I found that movie so terrible. But I didn't bother with the second one.
I thought it was an interesting take. I didn't need it. It's not mandatory viewing. It's supplemental.
Speaking of not mandatory viewing, let's get back to Halloween 6.
Well, I don't even know that we know the story or anything in Halloween 6.
What do you think? I'm gonna take a turn here so that we can really dig into this movie. What do you think the candle budget was in this movie? Because every third scene has like 20 candles lit in it. At one point, they go back to Paul Rudd's house after he has been gone all day, and there are at least 12 candles lit in his apartment when he gets back. The girl that's taken a bath after her sex scene and is about to get killed by Michael Myers has at least 20 in that room.
Well, did you know, it must have been hard to get, because in that scene, the flame, actually it's the sex scene before with her, they used the candle flame to hide her nipples.
That was a well done shot.
Yep. That couldn't have been easy to do.
And yet they showed her nipples later. So what was the point? Well, there's her nipple. Like, I was like, maybe the actress didn't want to be seen. And then they got a really good long shot of her afterwards. So
I'm guessing that's just editing options, like just so that you could cut one way or the other.
Well, it's a beautiful shot. Like, just from a sheer attractive shot option, if I was the editor on that, I would look at that and be like, sure, I like boobies, but this shot is really attractive, and we're going to show our boobies later, so let's just do this shot.
Sure, I think a lot of the shot, like, that's there's a lot of work that went into the framing of the shots. Like, if you look at it, if you really look back at it, I mean, it's like the film is a mess, but a lot of the shots are framed really nicely, or they're trying to do something to build tension. It's just the film is so uneven that the tension never happens.
I mean, there's plenty of stuff that makes little to no sense overall from a, you know, story perspective as well. But I mean, that you expect that in a Halloween or in virtually any slasher movie, really.
Yeah, normally, I'm not a big fan of the crawl at the beginning of this movie, of a movie. But, you know, having Donald Pleasance explain you know, like a page of text could have made this movie a whole lot clearer at the beginning of this movie.
And it was Paul Rudd in the theatrical cut. Because, I mean, they're in the theatrical cut, they cut. Joe Chappelle thought that Donald Pleasance was boring, so he took out as much of him as he could. So,
oh my, whatever. Now, definitely, that's a slap in the face to the Halloween fans, because
oh yeah,
because that's one of the shining lights of this is seeing Donald Pleasance in it was his last role, wasn't it?
Almost
last, yeah.
Yeah, he was old.
He passed away before it was released, yeah.
9,000
years
old. Yeah, he passed away before the reshot. They couldn't do that. He couldn't be involved in any of the reshoots because he passed away. Yeah, so, I mean, he was in ill health, clearly. You know, you can tell that. But it's, you know, I mean, it's maybe a film would have fared better if two of the people courted to do it, Peter Jackson and Quentin Tarantino, had actually accepted.
That would have been a really different film.
And I'll tell you what, we still would have been talking about it right now.
Well, yeah, probably. You still would have had all the interference and all the... And the script is, I mean, they're trying to do so much. They're trying to tie this movie into 1 and 2, and they're trying to tie 4 and 5 better into 1 and 2, and still trying to tie these into 4 and 5, and especially fix all the problems, especially at the end of 5, which happened 5 years earlier. Because at the end of 5, they all of a sudden did this scene where the man in black just shows up and lets Michael Myers out and kills all these police officers, and it's just a bloodbath in the police station, and you know, kidnaps Jamie Lloyd, and it's like out of nowhere, because they had no clue what they're doing. So that film leaves such the franchise in such a mess. This film is tasked with trying to fix it, and they did their damnedest, but I mean, you can't shine shit.
So is the man in black in 5, but never?
Yeah,
you never see who it is.
Like 10 minutes of him just walking around. Like every now and then, you just see these feet or this guy get off a bus, and nothing to do with anything. And then he shows up at the end and kills everybody. Ends up all these police officers with a machine gun and lets Michael Myers out and kidnaps Jamie Lloyd. Like it's. So I mean, you're starting from behind, like, and it had nothing to do with the rest of the movie. It was all thrown in because they didn't think the movie was interesting enough in 5. So 5 was such a trouble production. 4 is pretty good. 5 is such a trouble production that it leaves 6, and then the movie didn't do well. So I mean, it's 5 years in between. So like they're trying, like they're really trying to fix the problems that happened at the end of the last film.
It's funny because you get to the reveal of who the man in black, the mystery man, is, and it's literally the only other character who's been introduced in the film. Like everyone else is dead, except for one guy who doesn't actually make sense that he's the mystery guy, but he's the only one left.
That character is in the first film.
Okay.
In the very first film, when they're saying Michael Myers has escaped and Donald. Pleasance, who they wanted to be played originally, the original casting was they wanted Christopher Lee, but Donald Pleasance ended up with the role. The guy that walks him to the car, talking to him about Michael Myers, is the same character.
Oh wow!
Who in this film they wanted to be Christopher Lee, but instead they decided no, get the guy from Lethal Weapon. He was scary. That was literally their thinking.
I'm really glad that we've got Jack around to actually explain the entirety of the Halloween universe to us.
Now, I have questions. How about the Strode family?
How about
now? Was that PJ Souls' family in the first?
No, that was in this timeline. And it's to be really clear, this has been changed twice now.
That is important to say in this timeline.
In the original timeline, Jamie Lee Curtis is Laurie Strode, who was Michael Myers' sister and was adopted by the Strode family.
No.
Yes, that's at Halloween 2.
No. In the original timeline, which is Halloween 1, she was just some people who lived in his house, so that's why he wanted to kill her. That's the original timeline.
I am speaking of the timeline of Halloween 1 through 6.
Okay. Because he didn't become the sister. Halloween 2, in which John Carpenter regretted making that decision and writing that in the script.
Now in 3 and 4, I thought we were down to two Strodes.
We were into the Strode offspring, like as Laurie's sister or something.
Right, but we now in six we have a whole family of them. Yeah, one of them led by Donald Trump.
I assume they were cousins of the original Strodes or something.
It's his brother. They do tell you that in this, that it's that the family is, he is the brother of the family that adopted Laurie Strode.
John Strode is the brother. Okay.
Yeah.
Because John and Deborah Strode, yeah. A shout out to John Carpenter and Deborah Hill.
Yeah, and now, it makes no sense. Like, the only reason Michael Myers goes after them is that they're in that house. Like, that they're Strodes doesn't seem to play into that at all. So it's unclear why that's important in any way.
All I know is that this is the only film where Michael Myers walks around a lot in the daytime and kills people. Like, now,
the adopted daughter that's living with the Strodes,
yes,
that has the kid.
Mm-hmm. She's not adopted.
She isn't adopted, no. No.
Laurie was adopted. Laurie is Michael Myers' sister. This Strode, she is not adopted. It is implied, kind of, in this producer's cut, though, that the father of that child, and whose storyline about him hearing voices from the cult is never resolved. In the original script, he kills Kara at the end and stabs her, much like Michael Myers. But they never resolve that in this cut or any other, or the theatrical cut. But it's implied that John Strode is his father, I think, in that one scene of him in the office where he calls him a little bastard or whatever. Like, that's what I got, that there was an incest angle. It talks about her going off for years and stuff.
I totally didn't get that.
That's what I got.
that's not what the word bastard means either.
It's not what the word bastard means, but I mean, I'm saying this is, you know.
I wonder why I was confused by this.
Yeah,
it seems so simple now.
I can't counter the point because nothing else in the movie makes any sense. It's not how I read it, but fair enough. Definitely he didn't want her back.
That's why he hates the kid and hates, you know, but who knows.
As theories go, it's as good as anything in the film. because if the Strodes have no relationship with Michael Myers other than they exist in that house, why the boy has anything to do with any of this makes no sense. Like, he's barely related to Michael. He's like he is the what, second cousin of Michael's half sister.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Want to get the scoring?
Sure.
I'm ready to go to scoring.
You guys are all talking, and I'm just like, all I'm hearing is like blah 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 blah. You know, it's just like, okay, I don't even know where
I'm
we're
just
going
glad
anymore.
To have some resolution on this, because I had no idea what the hell was going on.
Either you're hearing or the headphones, you should check into that. For the two. All right. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in five categories, none of which are objective quality and Halloween producer's cut. You're welcome. The first category we use is called schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
Yeah, I mean the concept for the entirety of everything that goes into it seems very schlocky to me. The movie itself, I mean, there's just so much that's nonsensical. So if you equate nonsense with schlock, then this movie should do quite well. I'm not completely sure that I do. Going to give it a 4.
I do not equate nonsense with schlock. I'm going to give this movie a 4 also, though. But all that schlock is borrowed from other movies in this series.
And I go a little bit higher. I give it a 6. I'll give it a 6. And that's because the cult stuff to me is so schlocky. And I mean, it was intended to be more like Rosemary's Baby. That was the way it was envisioned when it was first created. More of a, you know, not really, not all the, the candles and the robes and all this stuff.
You mean more. Good. The word is good.
Yeah, good. And hey, in Halloween 7, it was going to be revealed that the entire town was actually in on it with Michael Myers, and that would have made even less sense. Like, the entire town was part of the cult, was the original wow. direction for 7 before they did H2O. So, yeah, like, that is the schlocky part. So I got a 6 on it.
I like the cult stuff. I like the almost Freddy Krueger like giving birth in a dungeon / industrial plant at the beginning of the film. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, the hospital that goes on for miles underground.
Yes. Yeah, but the low body count brings it down for me on the schlock though. So I'm only going to go with a 4 as well. All right, our next category. It's called More Heart Than Budget.
This one again feels to me. I mean, this is a Halloween movie, and it's number 6. By the time you reach number 6, you've eliminated a vast majority of the opportunity for heart. And given that it's a producer's cut, where it's just like, yeah, you know, we really didn't nail the story the first time. So we're going to give you this version, and I know it didn't get released theatrically or anything like that, but it still feels like a stretch and a hope, a wing and a prayer, perhaps. So I'm only going to go with a 2.
Oh!
I'm giving it a 3 just on the basis. Just on the basis. Paul Rudd is playing this role. Paul Rudd is committed. Paul Rudd is doing his thing. And that's all this movie has.
No, man. We talked about it right there. Like, they tried their... The writer had bios and bios and research done. The shots, they attempted to do nice things with the shots and the cinematography. Their budget is pulled from them to go. I know that Miramax sees this as just like an investment. I mean, they won the bidding war to do the movie, and it did have the biggest opening until the 2018, Halloween film. So at $7.5 million, that was the biggest opening in this film's series history. But you know, Chappelle, like I say, or whatever his name was, Joe Chappelle or whatever. I know he wasn't a fan. It was a job for him, but he still tried to do nice work with the cinematography. The actors are trying their best. The producer cares greatly about the franchise. They know how valued the franchise is to the fans. That's why they waited 5 years. They have this script that they worked on. Yeah, there's 11 revisions, but that's the problem. They tried so hard to pull everything together and to make sense out of what had become a convoluted past. Like the effort is there. The circumstances didn't allow it to succeed, so I got a 9.
Wow, that's you're a passionate man.
I know, and I'm right.
No, you're not. But the apologists, you know, you can make your own scores up. I'm not going to argue.
God bless you for letting us score it the way we wanted, Nick. All of that, but the fact that the director didn't care pulls that so far down. So maybe there's a novelization that could be done of this that would play out. 4 is what I'm going with. Our next category is called "What the Fuck" moments.
The story as a whole, like the druid part, I would have gone in and said that was very "What the Fuck," because it's been a very long time since I've seen these movies, so I can't specifically say. Everything is really jumbled for me when it comes to the Halloween universe, having watched them a long time ago in like a big clump. And so
the mess that it is that we talked about.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's moments that I think that I watch and I'm like, oh, I have a vague recollection of that, but I don't really know. So everything just kind of folds on top of each other. But when it comes to the what the fuck, you know, and I see and I hear that, like, oh, number 5 had that. So then number 6, the druids, is less what the fucky. What I really found for myself was strange was the moment where Paul Rudd's character, he goes to the he goes to the train station or the bus station, and it's like the bus station was closed. But you know, when we were there earlier, but now it's quite busy. There's people going, getting on their buses. He walks in, he looks down. Oh, look, there's a trail of blood. That might be something. And then he follows that down to the thankfully empty bathroom, and the baby starts crying at that exact moment. And it's just like, oh, of course, here's the baby. And he takes the baby home with him.
Nobody else saw him during those other hours.
Exactly. And all I could think of was, like, we could have, if this movie followed actual reality, then somebody would have heard that. The baby would have gone, you know, with the police somewhere else. And really, in all fairness, the entirety of the movie wouldn't have happened. So that would have been awesome.
To make that even more something that you might have missed, is that the clerk at the train station was a member of the cult that you see at the end. So you think he'd be on the lookout for that baby.
What was the clerk at the train station the blonde girl we see at the end?
No, it was a guy.
Okay, because I was confused by that end scene. Because you have a beautiful cult member step into frame. Uh-huh. And I swear she was the nurse that died in the first scene.
Yeah, she might have been the nurse. That's possible.
I said, yeah, that's worth looking at, but probably.
But yeah, so that's really the thing that struck out. And then the other thing that struck out to me, or stuck out to me in this case, is that there was so much walking in this movie. Everybody was walking someplace and maybe filling out part of the story and or trying to, but it was just like, okay, we're going to walk over here. Now we're going to walk over here. And it was just, good Lord, do people do anything other than go for a walk? I mean, so given everything, I'll give it a 5.
Oh, wow. That's yeah. 5. Okay.
Nick's feeling judgy this episode.
There's a lot in this movie that doesn't make sense. Uh-huh. For example, Paul Rudd gets the baby and then takes him to the hospital, but doesn't see a doctor or anything like that.
No, it's just
a scene so he can meet up with Donald Pleasance.
They call security for no reason instead.
It's a very strange scene. And the motivation behind it, I had trouble with. But the biggest WTF for me is the amount of just standing there Michael Myers does in this movie. You know, they spot him in front of the house, the Strode's house, and he stands there for like 3 or 4 scenes. You know, he gets in with the cult, and he just stands there as like background. And I mean, I can't imagine. Imagine in any of his other films, you know, he spent that much time just sort of standing there. Yeah, I'm gonna give this a 5 for just weird stuff that, you know, is WTF, but it's not good WTF.
Yes.
I got a 7. I think I could even go as high as an 8, but I'm going to go with the 7, probably because I went too high on the more heart than budget to balance it out a little bit. But I mean, okay, so this is a
and
movie.
God
where,
bless you for doing that.
This is a movie that starts off by saying people calling into the shock jock radio guy that's in the movie a little bit that they wanted Howard Stern to play. Of course, he turned it down,
which would have been much better.
So,
glad you're here.
Don't make me laugh so hard I cough. So, what was I saying?
Shock jock.
So yeah, they're calling in. Everybody's complaining because Halloween is banned. Then the next shot is the daytime. Everybody walking around in Halloween wearing costumes. And every house has like pumpkins and stuff on it. I'm like, wait, is it banned? Like that's one of the plot points in this thing that's never goes anywhere. But it's brought up that this Halloween is banned due to mass events, and yet it seems to be going on just fine everywhere.
In fairness, I actually thought that was explained. That was one of the moments where I thought they said, now that we finally brought Halloween back, and that's why everybody was celebrating.
Kids are having a party to rebel against the rules of and the shock jock is there to rebel against the rules of Halloween being banned, and that they're going to pull it. They want it back, because why are we still being paying or being punished for what happened years ago? That's never going to happen again.
Turns out that the only punishment was actually them making the movie and punishing fans.
So the moral of the story is that their parents were right. That's a terrible, a terrible takeaway from this. The important thing is that the grown-ups were right.
Halloween 4 and 5, which is in the same continuity, they're walking around in fucking Halloween costumes in those ones, and trick or treating in those ones too. So it makes no sense. It makes no.
These movies are fun.
Oh, yes, aren't they? let's go with. I love the shock jock gets killed, and it's during this big party thing, and there's tons of people around. So there's this little girl standing underneath a tree, and she's like, "It's raining! It's raining! The rain is red. The rain is red." Not thinking it's blood, and then I think it's a Paul Rudd whose character sees it, or Donald Pleasance. It's Donald Pleasance who sees her.
No, it was like, Paul Rudd.
I think it was Donald Pleasance.
No, it was Paul Rudd.
It was Paul Rudd. But either way, he looks up at the.
Did you watch this movie? Because your scores would indicate otherwise.
Paul Rudd. They look up and there's the shock jock. Now he's up there. Now, number one, the girl sitting there having red fall on her, thinking it's rain and not blood, and nobody being around. But number two, the amount of time it would take to take that guy, put him in the tree with all those Christmas lights and everything wrapped around, and yet Michael Myers apparently did that while there's like 100 people partying in the same location.
But that's just a slasher movie trope, right? That's the same as Michael Myers being able to chase the truck while he's walking at at a ridiculously slow rate.
He's apparently in the house killing that couple that just had sex at the exact same time as he's doing this to the shock jock. You know,
yeah. I mean, if you don't have I would be more surprised if those things don't exist in a horror movie. The horror movie that actually tries to explain those is worse.
It's in there. How about the time that they confront her and Michael Myers the Kara character or whatever, the Kara Strode, and the jump out the window. Basically, she's in this room with everybody, and her only escape is to go she just jumps out for no reason, and it's a great shot, but lands on the ground, and that, by the way, is where the movie really goes to shit. I'd like to point out.
Oh yeah, don't push the 90-year-old with the world's smallest knife out of the way.
No,
jump out a 2-story window through a pane of glass. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's your first instinct. Hey, this is how I'll get away. It made no sense, and there was no thinking or anything. It was just so sudden. I literally burst out laughing when that happened. I just started laughing so hard. Oh, and then of course the very final sequence. If you haven't seen the movie, I hate to even say it, because so many people haven't seen the producer's cut because it's rare still. But just what they did with the Donald Pleasance, the Dr. Loomis character, and Mike Myers, and it's just amazing. So I think 7 is a low score, but I'm going to go with it.
The killing of the shock jock is such a weird thing, because I did watch a YouTube that showed some side by side of the theatrical and the producers, because I was curious where the differences were. And in the theatrical, the guy at the shock jock gets into a van, and Michael Myers is hiding in the van already, and he kills him. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, but in the producer's cut, it pans over so you see this van is actually from the hospital, and that's what explains why Michael Myers is in the van.
I'm like, fair enough.
Why that explains why Michael Myers is in the van. It doesn't explain why the hell the shock jock gets into the van.
No, because he's walking around beforehand. He's going, where's the van? He's on the phone bitching about being in the van. He's like, where's our van? And he's looking for it, and he gets in the wrong one. So that actually does make sense. I mean, he can't read, apparently.
The vans are identical.
Because he spends a long time in that van before he's killed. You'd think he's, oh, shit, I'm in the wrong van.
We've already proven he's not really the smartest bulb
he's
in the
angry. Yeah. He's on the phone yelling at somebody. He doesn't have time to figure out what van he's supposed to be in. He's bitching about being in Haddonfield, and who wouldn't?
I've lost this right here.
Somebody has to give it a score so that we can move the fuck on.
Yeah, I'm only giving it a 4, but I'm giving it that 4 because Paul Rudd is in an entirely different film than everyone else. His level of drama, his level of seriousness is completely out of touch with the rest of the film. At one point he's like standing in the window, like doing his best Silence of the Lambs, just like watching her. You're like, what's that? That guy next door, he seems a little weird. And then you look up and he's standing in like a full length window, just not moving at all, just staring directly at her. Like, yeah, that's definitely you're definitely making a good first impression there. And when they get into his place, he's not only does he have the stuff postered all across the walls, like any good conspiracy theorist, there's stuff taped to the ceiling. Which is I don't think I've ever seen that in a crazy guy apartment before. That's well done to actually have attached things to the ceiling. For quick reference.
Well, it was nice that he was able to rent the best room in the house.
Yeah, and then the whole third act he spends in one of the cult's ceremonial. Robes, which is awesome. That's my favorite part of the whole film, is that he's
that is pretty great
ceremonial robes with the like these flared shoulder pads that come out about a foot on each side, and he's running around at that, and he bumps into walls with it. It's awesome. That's my
and you have no explanation. He's sitting there, and all of a sudden he's gone, like he's in the hospital, and like you don't see him for a while, and you're like, where the hell did he go to get that? Like, it made no sense.
There was one handy somewhere.
Yeah, apparently it was amazing. But it's so odd to see him in this film, isn't it? Like, he's so I don't know. Like he's not, because he's not joking. Like, I mean, and this was filmed before Clueless, but it came out after. But you're just so used to the guy that's always cracking jokes and the Paul Rudd kind of character, and in this he's so intense and. Everything and also for some reason his neck is hunched forward in some odd angle the whole movie, like yeah, it's a weird thing.
All right, I'm only going to four. The next category is called memorable moments.
Well, as I said earlier, I think this is one of those cases where every single Halloween movie, with probably the exception of the original, blends together so much that I couldn't tell you what actually came from which. And watching the producer's cut, I don't think helped in that whole thing. And certainly, much like listening to this show, it doesn't help my lack of confusion with the Halloween entity. I think that when the time comes and somebody says, so Halloween 6, what was it about? It had Michael Myers. Sorta. And I think maybe that's what I would take. And the fact that I was disgruntled by the lack of serious deaths. So I'm going to have to go with a 2.
You know, some movies are like Velcro. They just stick to your brain. This is not one of those. This is a Teflon movie. I don't think I'll remember this movie tomorrow.
Yeah, this is where the movie really does fall apart. It doesn't have the serious, like the one death of the John Stewart character with the sparks is, it's all right. you know, it's cool enough. It's unfortunate. You can clearly see the plastic head, you know, that's, but it's not, I mean, even in the theatrical cut, he explodes, the head explodes and it's really bloody. You know, they took that out. That's not in this one. I don't think I'll ever forget the cult part and like the cult underneath and that ending. I'll never forget it, but it's more Boogaloo than anything.
I actually can't remember it right now.
I got a 3. This is the big problem with this film, I think, for sure.
It is, I'm glad I took notes because it's already fading.
Oh, yeah, I watched this a week ago and thought, oh, well, it's okay, we'll watch it in a couple of days. Then we didn't, and then it was like, now that we're talking about it, I'm kind of like, oh. Wow, that's right.
I mean, I have seen this before. I have seen this movie, at least the theatrical version I had seen before. So that's definitely working against it. I'm only going to give it a 1.
I don't know. I don't want to say how recently I saw the theatrical version. I still can. Very recently.
Our last category is called Crazy Concept.
I really don't know where to go with this because it strikes me that the whole concept of attempting to fix what has gone on in so many other movies is not crazy, but almost a necessity to try to get your movie series back on track. And then the fact again that you have this as the producer's cut because the theatrical cut didn't work in other ways, so you try it this way, and I mean, there's crazy stuff that happens, and I think that for me, I'll give it some points based on that. I can't go crazy high though again because I just don't because from the way that I see this movie happening, just doesn't seem crazy enough. So I'm gonna go with a 4.
Yeah, if you came to me after Halloween 5 and pitch this movie and went, you know, we're going to fix everything and we're going to do it with druids, I would have probably said, cool. I like that. Go.
That makes as much sense as anything, really. You know.
Yeah. So I don't think it's that crazy. It certainly isn't like run of the mill, 2018. Let's just reboot everything. Boring. It certainly is interesting, but I can't go high on the scale. 4.
I think if you're judging Halloween 6, the crazy, maybe. But if you're judging the 4 and these things, but if you're judging Halloween 6, the producer's cut, and then you look into the backstory, and then you look into the druids, and then you look at all the WTF moments and the nonsensical and how they're trying to do so much. I think it's much higher, so I'm not even going to justify myself to you guys. 8.
Too much emotional attachment from Jack.
Says the man who gave us Crank 2.
Damn,
that was yes, crazy. But that one's awesome.
That one movie was fun. it's the 6th in a series. It's drifting further and further away from the original core. I think I would go with a 0 or a 1 on the craziness of this pitch, except that the core of it is, how do we fix this series for the next one? the reason to do all of this long walk through this movie, is so that 7 and on would have made more sense.
This is definitely the new beginning of Michael Myers.
I mean, it's interesting that you say, like, you know, the because now, of course, you would just reboot this. Like, you would have rebooted this 3 movies ago. You wouldn't have even tried the 4, 5, and 6. I mean, 3 was already a movie, like a sequel in name only. So, so yeah, you never would have made it to 6 in the way things are done now. So I'm gonna go with a 5, just because there is I think that's that bold choice of trying to fix a timeline for later, because that's we got to save this franchise. All right, so that's a 5, and that brings us to the end of the scoring. Every season we have 6 secret modifiers. And normally, if it was only a single person returning, we wouldn't give the supporting cast returns bonus to a movie, but it's Donald Pleasance. That's heart and soul of the original Halloween franchise right there. You know, some people like Jamie Lee Curtis, but Donald Pleasance to me.
Well, this is the only film in the series that doesn't have either Jamie Lee Curtis or Daniel Harris in it.
Hmm. Did Daniel Harris come in the 3rd one?
In the Michael Myers series.
Oh my God.
God damn it, that's right. There's the rest of the timeline.
Well, you know what? No, you can say 3. Jamie Lee Curtis did do some voiceovers on Halloween 3.
Did she really?
I can't remember what it was. It was some narration or something to do with the, or maybe it's like a radio thing, but she does have some cameo in that.
Well, that's, maybe we'll, I mean, there's enough Halloween movies. We could actually do a whole season of them.
Oh,
and still not get to the end.
Yeah.
I'll just retire.
You know what? It's actually, I was thinking about that though. Like the original Halloween shot for what, like $100,000 is perfect.
Yeah.
In many ways for KFAB. And yet in many ways seems like it would be a terrible thing to do.
I think it would get into that mainstream slot that we tend to
like is on the outside. It seems like it should be perfect if you're looking for the ultimate cult movie, right? Because it is, but it's
a cult movie that's transcended culthood and become good.
Yeah, which certainly nobody will accuse Halloween.
No,
Six
of. No, there's no.
All right, so there's the secret modifier, giving us a final total of 43.5 out of 100, which does put it in the bottom 10 of the films we have done so far. Right around New Year's Evil.
Yeah, slasher movies.
This is the worst scoring movie that I've picked by far. Because so far, my movies have been the ones that have been near the top, generally. So this is definitely the worst one. But I'd never seen it. I didn't know anything about it. I'd seen the other cut. I didn't know what I was getting into. I'm not saying I'm sorry, but...
Who picked Jocks, then? I thought you picked Jocks.
Nobody picked Jocks. We all came to... Back then, we were all deciding all 8 together for the first couple of seasons.
That does make sense.
Jocks was just a mistake. So, on that scale, I would still watch Halloween 6... above Jocks. So we're still okay in that regard.
I think it has more nudity.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Oh yes, please, because this episode has been the history of Halloween.
And the producer's cut will be 6 minutes longer.
Okay. All right. Why don't you tell the folks where to find us on the internet?
Absolutely. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And for everything else, go to our podcast sponsors, WeTalkPodcasts.com. Their website is the home of the Octagon, which I mentioned earlier. It is the running track of our search for the ultimate B-movie. And they also We Talk Podcasts also has a Facebook and a Twitter.
All right. Well, we will be wrapping up Season 6, Son of Boogaloo, with our next episode where we talk the Bruce Lee movie, Game of Death 2. And so it seems amazing that we are coming to the end. And I know that the excitement is on so that we can choose our movies for Season 7, which is coming up next episode as well. So, you know, there's no point in going...
Do we tell people what that will be? I think it's just a chance to use free mustache rides one more time.
All right. Fair enough. Free mustache rides coming up next episode. I don't know that there's much else to say after that. It's a really good wrap up. I'll tell you that right now. So for Jack and for Nick and for Jim, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Every legend is based on fact. Every myth is grounded in truth. For 17 years, the town of Haddonfield, Illinois, has been haunted by a night when evil roamed the streets and a madman ruled the night. Everyone knows his name. Now, everyone will know the truth.
I knew what he was, but I never knew why.
Halloween 6, the origin of Michael Myers.